Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. The Norwegian Bliss docked in Juneau this morning, marking the beginning of the 2024 cruise ship season. As KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, both tourists and businesses are excited for the season ahead.
Jade Wang and Minhui Li set up the tripod to take a selfie in front of the Welcome to Juneau sign on the seawalk. They're here from New York, off the first cruise ship of the season in Juneau. Through a translation device, they say they think the snow on the mountains is beautiful.
I would recommend my friends from the motherland to come here.
Yeah.
Another couple, Jean and Rob Hands, say they came all the way from Scotland to celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary in Alaska.
I always talked about coming to Alaska, so it was just one of these last-minute decisions. Let's see if we can go. Probably if we'd come later, we might have seen more of the wildlife. Yeah.
Rob says he sees similarities between tourism in Juneau and back home in Scotland.
We get loads and loads of visitors. The roads become full of campers and camper vans. And you can't get a place for bed and breakfast unless you book ahead. And, you know, it is busy, but it does well for the economy. So that's a great thing.
More than 1.6 million passengers are expected to arrive in Juneau from now until the end of the season in late October. On Tuesday morning, a steady stream of tourists walked down the seawalk and into stores downtown. The familiar smell of grilled chicken filled the air from Bernadette's barbecue stand near Marine Park. Robert De La Cruz says he's prepared 200 chicken skewers for the opening day, and he hopes they're all eaten by the time the ships leave.
Hopefully we sell that one. As long as it's not raining and windy, that's my fear. Windy and rain, people don't get out of crew member, you know. Some tourists, you know, they like to eat now, so yeah, it's fun. I'm getting excited this year.
Brandy Riggs with Juneau Tours and Whale Watch stood at a booth along the seawalk. She says throughout the morning, visitors have been buying tours to the Menenhall Glacier and for whale watching trips.
There's no guarantee that you're going to see whales, but we're definitely offering it still. We've got some glacier trips going on. Here in the next couple weeks, we'll have some city tours going as well.
Down Franklin Street, Gary's Fine Jewelry is also welcoming customers. Owner Gary Totwani keeps the store open year-round, and he says he's happy to see tourism season start.
A lot of people are happy. Everybody, you know, surround like locals and the people who works for the local stores, you know, they're happy also. So far, so good. It's excited to see the welcome the ship, and we are ready.
The next ship will arrive a week from now. With help from Katie Anastas, I'm Clarice Larson in Juneau.
And state education officials continue to dispute the federal government's claim that Alaska didn't fund schools equitably during the pandemic. As KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, Commissioner Dina Bishop responded to the latest letter from the U.S. Department of Education on Friday.
Federal education officials say Alaska failed to meet conditions attached to COVID relief funding for schools. The rule, called maintenance of equity, said states couldn't disproportionately reduce state funding to its highest need districts when it gave out pandemic relief. The U.S. Department of Education says Alaska did that in four school districts: the Juneau School District, Anchorage School District, Fairbanks North Starborough School District, and Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. But during a press call on Friday, Education Commissioner Dina Bishop said Alaska followed its funding formula as usual during the pandemic.
This equalized funding approach did not change during the COVID-19 pandemic. Alaska did not reduce per pupil spending on education in any of our school districts in order to take advantage of federal funds.
A drop in enrollment in a school district means a drop in state funding, she says.
Which will always result in fluctuation in individual school district funding because the funding is actually based on student enrollment. This is not a reduction or a cut. It's simply how the state formula works.
Alaska's school funding formula starts with a base amount per student, called the base student allocation, and then makes adjustments for things like school size, the number of students with intensive special needs, and other factors specific to each district. The goal is to recognize the wide range of students' needs across the state and provide the funding to meet them.
Alaska is very, very different than any other state, specifically in regard to our multipliers and equalization formula between rural and urban Alaska. So the cost differentials between rural and urban have been noted over time, not just in the education industry, but in all industries.
The state also has a provision called Hold Harmless, which helps districts who've lost students by gradually reducing the amount of state funding they receive over the course of 3 years instead of immediately. All those factors mean state funding varies from year to year. During the pandemic, as many students dropped out of brick-and-mortar schools and enrolled in homeschool programs, the amount of funding they generated for districts changed. Bishop stressed that the maintenance of equity requirement was the first of its kind.
For states with an equalized per pupil funding formula like ours, there was no way to know how to comply if simply maintaining your funding and distribution in the same historical manner was insufficient.
Last week, federal policy advisor Austin Reed told the Alaska Senate Education Committee that more than 40 states were initially deemed out of compliance with the maintenance of equity requirements.
To date, I'm aware of at least 7 states that have made supplemental appropriations to demonstrate compliance for fiscal year 2022, with payments ranging from several hundred thousands of dollars up to nearly $100 million.
Last month, the U.S. Department of Education said Alaska could resolve its noncompliance by sending nearly $30 million to the 4 school districts. The department did not respond to a request for comment on Bishop's claim that Alaska did fund schools equitably by following the formula. Bishop said it's too early to say whether supplemental payments are the only solution. She said she hoped to meet with federal education officials sometime this week. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Last weekend, athletes from across Alaska, and some from the lower 48, came to Juneau to compete in the 7th annual traditional games at Yada'at Kahle Juneau Douglas High School. The events represent fitness needed for survival and hunting skills in the Arctic, but in the gym, the athletes are trying to beat their own best scores. Matthew Quinto stands on an animal skin blanket held taut off the ground by a ring of people. They start to pull the blanket in and out slowly, and Quinto gets ready to leap. He jumps frighteningly high in the air, does a backflip, and lands back on the blanket.
Originally, it was used as a way of lookout in villages over Arctic tundra.
The backflip is just a bonus. The blanket toss is the first event at the traditional games. Quinto, who coaches for the traditional games and Native Youth Olympics, says he only gets to do it a couple of times a year.
But it's just something we do for fun. We can't really practice it because it requires a whole community just to pull the blanket.
Donna Walk, Ezra Ellisoff, is the announcer for the games. He's an athlete himself. He says each event requires many different skills.
There's agility, there's explosive strength, there's flexibility, there's just a lot of different things. And all the games are different in their own unique way, of course.
But his favorite is the Alaskan high kick. For that event, athletes get into position, on the ground, with one arm supporting them, grab one foot, and then launch the other up to try and reach a ball suspended in the air. If they touch it, officials raise it a bit higher and higher until the athlete misses.
That one's about your technique and how much you can perfect it rather than pure strength and flexibility and whatnot. So you can now kick a lot of people once you start going what we call vertical, which is like a one-handed handstand.
Luca Silva is officiating some of the events. He says it's been exciting to see young people push themselves to beat their own records.
I've heard a lot of wow, I can't believe I did that. I'm so proud of myself.
This year, athletes broke 13 records in different categories. About 260 athletes from 31 schools participated this year, 200 more than the first traditional games in 2018. About 12 of them are from Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka. They won 7 high school events. Tessa Anderson won the overall athlete title for high school girls. Her favorite event is the scissor broad jump, jumping as far as she can in 4 steps, as if leaping from ice floe to ice floe.
I just like the feeling of the pattern of the jumping. I don't know how to explain it, but.
She won the high school girls' scissor broad jump category. Anderson's teammate, Lenny Brandel, says that the camaraderie and support from the other athletes is part of what makes traditional games so special.
It's just like a nice environment. Everyone comes together, we're all nice. No one's ever talking trash to you. It's just always an upbringing.
And you can hear the support in the gym. Like when an athlete is gearing up for the Alaskan high kick at a height they haven't reached before, they'll stomp their foot in a rhythm to get the audience to clap for them. Sometimes they miss. And sometimes they reach it. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery.